there's nobody been more consistent than us. We've been unbelievably consistent. Our league doesn't get the credit. Maybe we need some of them ACC guys on some of them big network shows that they have.
That's Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney doing his best Rodney Dangerfield impression and claiming that, despite the team's incredible success, Clemson still doesn't get any respect. Today, what Dabo did to build a dynasty, and why, despite their dominance, Clemson is still the underdog in the national championship. I'm Ina Kimes. It's Tuesday, January 7th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Indeed. Andrea, are you ready to give Dabo more bulletin board material?
I live to give Dabo bulletin board material.
Andrea Adelson is a senior writer for ESPN.
This is part of my existence here at ESPN because I am part of ESPN, you know, the place where nobody wants to give Clemson any credit. So here I am. I'm ready to go, Mina.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think he's so obsessed with disrespect?
I think Dabo feels he has been counted out his entire life. When you look at where he came from, walk on at Alabama, sleeping in a dorm room with his mom because she couldn't afford to have a place to live. In the same bed, by the way. And then from there, trying to get a start in coaching, but then not really having an avenue for success. All of these things lead up to Dabo always feeling like he has been an underdog his entire life. And now you get to a school like Clemson, which has had tradition and history, but not like those blue bloods that we're so familiar with in college football. He feels like Clemson now is the quintessential underdog. And so every time people try and take a shot at his program, it's like they're taking a shot at Dabo, and it's all personal because of all of his own history, and he gets defensive.
People just don't pay attention. But at the end of the day, it's not my job to build a good league. It's my job to build a good program. And I think we've done a nice job of that for a long time.
A lot of people consider it maybe whining sometimes or complaining too much, but Dabo feels like he has to be the guy that stands up and represents himself and Clemson no matter what.
Do you think he's right this year when he says that Clemson hasn't gotten any respect?
I do think he is right. I cover the ACC, and I've covered the ACC for the last 10 years for ESPN. I am extremely familiar with the narrative about the ACC, that this is a conference that isn't any good, that is the worst among the Power Five, that doesn't have good players, they don't have good teams, they don't win big games. And for me, Clemson the last 5 years has shattered all of those perceptions people once had, not just of the ACC, but of Clemson in particular. A program that has won two national championships over the last several years and destroyed Alabama the way that they did last year should not be 100% tied to what happens throughout the rest of their conference. I don't understand why the national perception continues to be that this is a team that gets lucky or isn't deserving of being where they are right now.
Dabo gets the Gatorade bath on the near sideline. Clemson will win its third national championship in college football. The clock's still at 20, but they are swarming the field.
What was Clemson football before Dabo arrived?
Well, Clemson football was a program that had been trying to get back to its glory years of the past, because this is a program that won a national championship in 1981. Before Dabo got there, they were struggling to find their footing and a way to make themselves relevant again. And so in 2008, they decided to move on from their head coach, Tommy Bowden, midway through the season because it just wasn't working out. And their athletic director at the time Terry Don Phillips went in to tell the coaches that he was making a change. He looked at Dabo Swinney, who was the receivers coach at the time, never been a coordinator before in his life, had been selling real estate several years before. And he looks at Dabo and he says, "You're my interim coach. I'm going to give you a chance to earn this head coaching job. I want to see how you do, and I'm not ruling anything out." And Dabo heard those words and thought, "I'm going to be the head coach here."
I've worked my whole life to have an opportunity to lead a team. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I don't claim to be perfect or have all the answers. I'm going to make some mistakes, but I promise you I'll make them full speed.
There was nothing about Dabo that anybody in the Clemson fan base and across the nation would have thought, that guy's head coaching material. But what Terry Don Phillips saw during practice was the energy, the enthusiasm, the way the players responded to him, the way they always smiled around him. All of these things he observed in practice is why he wanted Dabo to potentially be the head coach of this program. And in those first couple of years, it didn't go great for Dabo. In 2010, they finished 6-7, and Dabo thought he was about to get fired. He was told that Terry Don was waiting for him in his office and the lights were out. And the first thing Dabo says is, "I'm sorry, it's going to get better." And Terry Don told him, "I believe in you, and I believe that we're going to get the job done here." And in his comments to the media after Dabo's job was saved, he said, "I know you're all disappointed, but in 2020, this will be the best decade in Clemson history. And you know what? This has been the best decade in Clemson history."
Why do you think he's been so successful?
I think there are several reasons. Number one, that energy, enthusiasm, the fun, the way the players responded to him.
"We like to dance. With a name like Dabo, you better be able to dance."
I think that has been the basis and the foundation of the program. You are drawn to Dabo. You want to play for him. And if you're a player, you feel he has always got your back, no matter what.
"I can't give you guts, and I can't give you heart. And tonight, hey, it was BYOG, bring your own guts."
That leads to my second point, which is recruiting. Those players on the recruiting trail responded to Dabo and the intensity and the passion and the fun that he was having. And so it starts with a guy like CJ Spiller, who was a highly touted recruit out of the state of Florida. Then it goes to Taj Boyd, a quarterback out of the state of Virginia. And as these high-end recruits started coming to Clemson, and as Clemson started to win and build a program, that means you're able to bring in more and more elite-level recruits. And that leads to my next point. It's not just recruiting, it's development. How do you develop your players? You hire a terrific coaching staff. And those two are tied hand in hand. Dabo, for the most part, has been able to keep his staff together. There has not been a lot of coaching turnover throughout his career. And when you have coaches who have been with you, who understand what you're trying to do, who understand the program, who understand the culture, who know what you're looking for on the recruiting trail, and who know how to develop players, you're giving yourself an opportunity year in and year out to compete for championships. And so that's why I think Clemson has been able to build this program under Dabo.
When did the tide really turn on the way Clemson is perceived? That wasn't meant to be a Bama joke. I just want to know.
I think it started in 2015 when Clemson made the playoff and they beat Oklahoma and they almost beat Alabama in the national championship game.
"And that defense had to work hard to stop the brilliance of Deshaun Watson. 45-40. Alabama wins."
And they lost the game. But I think people did not really expect Clemson to challenge Alabama the way that they did in that national championship game. And so from that point on, they have been given much more credibility on a national scale because of the way that they competed against Alabama. Now, in 2016, they beat Alabama for the national championship. And so I think that essentially cemented the way people viewed this program until we get to this season and all of these questions about Clemson and whether they were truly deserving of a spot in the playoff started happening all over again.
"They do look beatable.
Clemson can't afford a slip up.
They have not been their best.
There have been some national media folk, including one who works for our network, who have been really hard on Dabo.
I think Dabo Swinney is the most annoying winner in all of sports. I mean, the guy just can't keep his trap shut. I mean, somebody just give the man a pacifier, send him to timeout.
And who've been very critical of Dabo because of the way he has tried to defend the program this year.
Obviously, if we lose this game, I mean, they're going to kick us out. They don't want us in there anyway. We got to go 30-0. I mean, we ain't got no choice.
I do believe the overarching point that Dabo is trying to make is that Clemson has been here the last 5 years. What they have done is nothing new.
We've won 115 games this decade. So has Ohio State and so has Alabama. And we've played both of them.
And so it doesn't matter the conference affiliation. Just look at Clemson football and the way they've been able to turn the tide on this program. See, I did it too, Mina. I used the turn the tide too.
It's just there. Yeah, I mean,
it's just there. It's yeah. An easy layup. You know, but the way that they have turned this program from being little old Clemson to big, bad, potentially evil empire Clemson. And some of that might have to do with the fact that Clemson doesn't lose. And people just get tired of seeing the same team winning over and over and over again. But I do think people started to view Clemson differently when they showed they could not just compete with Alabama, but beat them.
Coming up, why the difference between Alabama and Clemson might come down to a piece of playground equipment. The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So, Andrea, how would you say Dabo's coaching style compares to that of his adversary, Nick Saban?
I have been in the Alabama football facility and I have been in the Clemson football facility. And there are a couple of striking differences, but the first one is that Clemson has a slide and Alabama does not.
What kind of slide are we talking about? Like a slip and slide, water slide, playground slide? I need a visual.
There is a playground slide that goes from the upstairs of the football facility all the way downstairs. It's silver and there's not any twists in it or anything like that, but it is a slide like you would find somewhere on your local playground. And Dabo takes it all the time, by the way. I've been down the slide myself because you kind of have to when you walk in there and you see the slide. It's one of the first things you see when you walk into the facility. How do you not go on the slide? You're compelled to go on the slide. So if you want to sit here and boil it down to what are the key differences, the slide to me represents who Dabo is.
Andrea, how would you react if you saw Nick Saban go down a slide?
I would think that the world was coming to an end. I feel like that would be the natural reaction. Like, what has happened here?
So coming into the season, after Clemson won the championship last year and brought their star quarterback Trevor Lawrence back, what were the expectations like for the program?
I would be hard-pressed to find preseason publication that did not have Clemson in the playoff. I believe Clemson was universally chosen as a team that would get back there. You looked at the schedule. You looked at who Clemson had, and you looked at the trajectory of where we all thought Trevor Lawrence would be at the start of the season. And it was hard to avoid thinking of Clemson as the number one team in the country. And that's where they were until the North Carolina game. And that's when I think a lot of people started changing their minds about Clemson.
Howell sprinting out, gets hit, and does it get in. This baby's over. Clemson will survive.
Clemson had to come from behind to win against a group that only won two games a year ago, that had a true freshman quarterback playing. A lot of people suddenly started to wonder anew about the Clemson schedule, because it almost felt as if that was a loss for Clemson, even though they came back to win the game.
We've dominated 11 out of 12 games. Dominated. We're not any different. There's no pre-North Carolina. We just had one close game where we stunk. We turned it over. We gave up big play. We just didn't do it, but we won. You know, we won.
So the knock on Clemson this year has been that they've played a relatively weak schedule. Andrea, explain to us how these schedules are put together in the first place and why Clemson's slate was comparatively not as strong.
The non-conference schedule that teams put together are made years in advance with the idea that the teams you're scheduling are going to be pretty good. And when you're at a program like Clemson and you're trying to compete for championships and you understand that strength of schedule is meaningful, you try to schedule teams from Power Five conferences that you think are going to enhance your schedule. And so if you look at Clemson's recent history, they've played Georgia, they've played Auburn, and they play Notre Dame as well. This year, it was Texas A&M. They beat A&M last year, and the Texas A&M game last year was held up as one of the better wins in the Clemson schedule. Well, this year, Texas A&M was not as good as they were a year ago. And even though Clemson dominated that game at the beginning of the year, that game did not give Clemson any kind of cash when it came to saying, hey, look at our premier non-conference schedule. And it's because A&M was not any good. Add in the fact that the ACC had no other ranked teams for a long stretch of the year, and all of the scheduling that Clemson tried to do in non-conference, it ended up not paying any kind of dividends or benefiting Clemson, because it was hard for them to overcome the relative weakness of their conference as a whole.
So, Andrea, on one hand, Clemson has been incredibly dominant. As you wrote, they're the evil empire. On the other hand, they are the rebels. I swear this isn't a Disney synergy thing. It's just in my brain right now. But, you know, they are actually the underdog in this national championship game, and that's how Dabo seems to be characterizing them. Which is correct?
I think if you're Dabo Swinney, they're both correct, and you're going to use it to your advantage however way you can. What's interesting to me about the way the perception has shifted about Clemson is this was the lovable underdog. And now that they've dismantled and taken down Alabama, and they're the teams that everybody is gunning for, suddenly in this national championship game, people might be rooting for the evil empire of all conferences to take down the lovable Clemson Tigers, little old Clemson. It blows my mind every time I stop and think about, wait, hold on. People might be rooting for an SEC team when everybody universally outside the SEC is totally against the conference. But I think that really just speaks to the success that Clemson has had.
So they actually are the underdogs in the national championship, according to Vegas, at least. Does that surprise you at all?
No, it does not surprise me. And honestly, I think that has everything to do with LSU and not much to do with Clemson, because of what LSU has done for the bulk of the season against stronger competition and the way that they completely dismantled Oklahoma in the semifinal, I think made everybody believe that LSU was on a collision course with destiny and history, playing in a national championship game in New Orleans, which is essentially going to be a home game for LSU.
So after the championship game, regardless of what happens, LSU's quarterback, Joe Burrow, is going to the NFL. Alabama's quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, is also going to the NFL. Meanwhile, Clemson's quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, is a sophomore, so he's going to be back next year. Regardless of what happens in the game, Andrea, does this mean Clemson will once again be the favorite in 2020?
Yes, and that is what makes Clemson the new evil empire, right? And this is for all the Clemson fans who are probably tweeting at me right now, how dare you call us the evil empire. It's more about this idea that you have got this gigantic program that has taken over the world and refuses to go away. They are going to continue to try and dominate everyone, to annihilate the competition, and to not feel sorry about it. They might do it with a smile and a joke and some dancing in the locker room, but they're still going to try and take your head off every time they're going to go out there and play.
So, Andrea, Clemson is like the Death Star if the Death Star had a slide. Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you, Mina. Go Evil Empire.
Coming up, a betting scandal roils the world of Jeopardy. Yes, Jeopardy.
Now you can win a $250,000 home renovation designed by the Scott Brothers in an ADT smart home security system. To enter, just head to ADT.com/pass the protection and tell us what you want to protect. A beautiful home is great, but a safer home is even better. Now is your opportunity to get both. The winner and the winner's home will be featured in an ADT video with the Scott Brothers. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Ends March 16th. Must be 18 or over and a homeowner as of February 1st, 2020. To learn more about the contest and read the official rules, go to ADT.com/pass the protection. Here's another story I want you to know. Today is the first day of Jeopardy's Tournament of Champions. Three of the greatest competitors in the history of the show, Brad Rutter, James Holzhauer, and noted Seahawks fan Ken Jennings, will be vying over the course of several episodes for a $1 million prize. A lot is at stake, and not just for the contestants. According to a fascinating story by ESPN's David Purdom, gamblers have been placing bets on the tournament, and there's a reason to believe someone got inside information. Before we get into what happened, you might be listening and wondering, wait, people bet on Jeopardy? Apparently they do. They also bet on other pre-taped programming. According to Purdom, this is called novelty betting, and while bookmakers in the US generally avoid it, it happens all the time internationally. There are people who bet on who will die in Game of Thrones. There are people who wager on what will happen in WWE matches. And they'll even bet on what's going to go down in the Super Bowl halftime show. Now, as you can imagine, the space is rife with controversy and inside information, some of which blows up in bettors' faces. At the Oscars last year, there was a rumor that a director named Yorgos Lanthimos was going to win Best Director, which seemed unlikely. And indeed, the rumor was false. But sportsbooks won more than $182,000 betting on the actual winner, Alfonso Cuarón, likely profiting from the false information. So what happened with Jeopardy? The tournament was taped in early December. A week later, word of who won started to spread. And when sportsbooks started to notice a few big bets on one competitor, they assumed the integrity of the market was, well, in jeopardy. So they shut it down. Now, it's possible that the rumors are incorrect. We won't know for sure until the tournament ends. But in the meantime, and I say this as someone with zero inside information, I'll take Ken Jennings for 1,000, Alex. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily Double. I'll talk to you tomorrow.